Hey everyone, it's Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's great to be here with you as always. I want to welcome you to our midweek video, our Thursday morning video here this morning on February 24th, 2022. I'd like to welcome you to our YouTube channel here, Grace Life Bible on YouTube. If you haven't already done so, if you would consider subscribing and ringing the alarm bell so that you can stay current with the ministry when we go live from our assembly building on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock and 10:40, and then also when we release and create content here midweek from my office. We're glad that you are with us this morning. Our featured book for the month of February is my book, Rightly Dividing E.W. Bullinger, Assessing His Life, Ministry, and Impact. This will be the last week for a while that we're featuring this book. This book is about an important figure in the history of dispensationalism. If you ever had questions about E.W. Bullinger, the X-28 dispensational position, how it emerged, and sort of what the thought processes and so forth were that led to that coming onto the scene in the early 20th century, you're definitely going to want to check out my book, Rightly Dividing E.W. Bullinger. Definitely focuses on the emergence of the X-28 dispensational position and how that occurred, and then also with some specific information in the appendix about how Bullinger used the postscript argument as it relates to Romans chapter 16. So you're going to want to check that out if you haven't already done so. Also want to remind you about our Rumble channel here, Grace Life Bible Church on Rumble. We're up to 189 subscribers, so we've had a good week as far as people joining and subscribing on Rumble. If you're into alt tech sites, we've established this as an alternative to YouTube should something happen to our YouTube ministry. So if you wouldn't mind checking us out there as well. So this week, I want to make a quick video updating folks on something that I talked about back in December of last year. In December of last year, I taught this video from my office here, Looking Behind the Veil, Primary Source Documents and the King James Translator's Manuscript 98. So I talked and introduced the audience to Manuscript 98. Manuscript 98 is one of the work-in-progress primary source documents that have been left to us by the King James translators. This website that you see on your screen right now, this is the Lambeth Palace Library website, and this is the library that houses currently Manuscript 98. Here is an image. Lambeth Palace Library has released a limited number of images of the manuscript to the public to view online, and here we see the beginning of Romans. Here's the insignia of the library, Lambeth Palace Library here. And then we could see the epistle of St. Paul the Apostle to the Romans, first chapter. And so here we could see Romans chapter 1 in the document. Now, I'm not going to go through a big description of the document. If you are interested in that, I would encourage you to check out the lessons that I have been teaching on this in my class From This Generation Forever. Those would be lessons 166, lesson 167, lesson 168. And I will leave links to the description in those lessons. It's specifically in lesson 166 that I talk about a physical description of manuscript 98, as well as its contents, what's in it, and kind of delve deeply into all of those details in lesson 166. This lesson right here, Looking Behind the Veil from last December 16, I presented in rudimentary form a document that I was working on that had tables. The last 2 weeks in my From This Generation Forever class, in lessons 167 and 168, I have officially presented or formally presented the table to my class and to the viewing audience. Now, you might have missed this. These were longer studies of an hour, roughly an hour duration, where I went through every verse in Romans chapter 1 and every verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and went through this table with the audience. Now, I have released now finally online, and that's mostly what this video is about, this document for the public or for people to go through if they're interested in having the document and going through it in a meticulous way themselves to check out what I've been presenting. And this document is essentially the notes that I use to teach lesson 167 and then again lesson 168 this past Sunday. So what's in the document and how did I create the document? Let's talk just quickly first about how I created the document. The document was created in the following manner. First of all, I chose Romans chapter 1 and 1 Corinthians 13 because those two chapters have released images online on the Lambeth Palace Library website. So in other words, right here, like we are literally looking at Romans chapter 1. Okay, this is the document. This is Romans chapter 1. If I went up here to the thumbnails, I could adjust this and we could also look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I'm not going to do that for the sake of time. But I chose Romans 1 and 1 Corinthians 13 because of the released images online of those chapters in manuscript 98. So I did not want anybody to have to take my word for it when you can go straight to the source yourself and look at it, okay? Now, Ward Allen, in 1977, he did work on this, where he went through all of manuscript 98 and created a document literally collating out manuscript 98. I also have that. But the reason I picked Romans 1 and 1 Corinthians 13 is so that readers of the document could literally view the images themselves online. And now I'm in the wrong spot. They could literally view the images themselves online. So in this particular document, if you go to the top, I believe this is page 2, here are links to the images on the Lambeth Palace Library website. So I used the actual manuscript in conjunction with Ward Allen's collation for manuscript 98. I also used my copy here of a 1602 Bishop's Bible. I was able to pull through a database, Early English Books Online, my own copy of a 1602 Bishop's Bible. So when you look at the document here and you see these collation tables, and the collation tables are comparing now the 1602 Bishop's Manuscript 98 and the 1611 AV. So I literally have in my possession and looked every verse up and collated out bishops, the 1602 bishops, the manuscript 98 readings with a 1611 King James Bible. And then there are comments here in the margin. All right. Now, using Ward Allen, we've been able to track where in the instances where the bishop's Bible was revised by the King James translators. We can look at, and by the way, they did follow Rule 1. Rule 1 was absolutely followed with a high degree of fidelity, and that was the rule to alter the bishop's Bible as little as possible other than what the truth of the original would allow. And they followed Rule 14 in the instances where they determined, the translators determined, that a prior English Bible, be it Tyndale, Coverdale, Great Bible, Geneva Bible, etc., better match the truth of the original, that they should amend the bishops by those readings, okay? And so we can also track through the document where readings came from that end up in the King James and where they create their own original readings. Now, I'm not going to go through this whole thing and go to every verse here because you can do that on your own when you click on the link below to access this document for yourself. So what I just want to do is I want to underscore or highlight some of the main takeaways from this document. So to do that, I'm going to scroll down here, and at the end of each chapter, so all this that I'm scrolling through here is every verse in Romans chapter 1 with a collation showing you the bishops, 1602 bishops, manuscript 98 reading, the AV reading, and then comments and notes on the far right column. And then at the end, I have some summative information where we go over what the major takeaways from Romans chapter 1 are and try to sort of tee this up in a way that folks can really understand what's going on. But folks, it is amazing. It's exciting to me. We can look at the translational process of the King James translators in real time by looking at these primary work in progress documents, okay? So here are some summative observations now from Romans chapter 1. So first of all, we can look at the readings that were used to revise the bishops. And in this particular case, we can see that the King James translators were working off the bishop's Bible as their base text, and that this is undeniable. Moreover, as they worked to revise the bishops according to Rule 1, they did so according to Rule 14. I kind of just mentioned that a moment ago. The translators compared a 1602 bishop's text against the original language's Greek, as well as previous English versions, and amended the text accordingly. The places where the bishop's text was amended in Romans 1, the revision statistics regarding the source of the alternative reading found in the AV are as follows. So in the instances where the King James translators elected to revise the 1602 bishops, the statistical analysis reveals that 19 times the alternative reading was provided by the Reims, 17 times by the Geneva, 16 times it is an original English reading to the King James translators themselves, 6 times Whittingham's 1557 Geneva New Testament, 4 times Tyndale, and 3 times Coverdale or the Great Bible. So of the 65 revisions made to the 1602 bishop's text of Romans chapter 1 by the King James translators, 16 were their own creation. The remaining 49 readings supplied by previous English Bibles, just as Rule 14 called for. Of these 49 readings, the vast majority were supplied by the Reims New Testament, 19. Now again, a lot of you are going to find that to be an inconvenient fact, but it's true. The King James translators did utilize the Reims New Testament. Boyce talks about this in his notes, and there are wording choices, both in manuscript 98 and in the final product of 1611 that are seemingly coming from the Reims. And then the second highest is the 1560 Geneva Bible. So what we can do then is we can categorize the revisions that are observable in Romans chapter 1. Okay, and we can look at what kind of changes are being made. So, by the way, this is my own creation here. This is the result of my own work. I'm not getting this part of it that I'm about ready to talk about here from anybody else. So category one are bishops, should say readings. I already see a mistake. Where the bishop's reading is accepted into the AV without any changes. So in other words, that is an example where the 1602 bishop's reading is lifted and put into the AV, no changes to the text at all. In Romans chapter 1, there are 3 verses that fit category 1. Category 2, bishop's reading is accepted into manuscript 98 without any changes, but then amended in the AV. So it's originally accepted with no changes into manuscript 98. Then later on, further revisions are made that show up in the final product of 1611. Category 3, the bishop's reading is amended in manuscript 98 and accepted into the AV with no further changes. Okay, so though that is a third category where I think I just misspoke on the last one. And category 2, it's a situation where the bishop's reading is accepted in manuscript 98 and then further amended in the AV. In category 3, the bishop's reading is amended in manuscript 98 and then the emendations of manuscript 98 are accepted into the AV with no further revision. So that's a third category there. And then we have category 4, where the bishop's reading is amended in manuscript 98 and then further amended in the AV. So there's one emendation there's one level of revision indicative of manuscript 98, and then there's further revision after manuscript 98, and then you have the final product of 1611. And then we have category 5, which is bishop's readings that are amended in manuscript 98, only to have all or some of the original bishop's reading reinstated in the AV. So these are cases where they originally thought that something in the 1602 bishops needed to be amended, only to later in the final product of 1611 reinstate what the bishop's reading was from the 1602 bishops as their base text. So then we can look at all of those. Now I just want to scroll. Then next coming up is the 1 Corinthians 13 collation. One thing I want to point out here that I failed to in my video from Sunday in lesson 168 is, look, this charity thing in 1 Corinthians 13, the bishops already has charity in all of these verses, and the King James translators are electing to keep that reading. They are not creating that reading. That is not original to them. Those readings of charity here are readings that were already in their base text that they inherited according to Rule 1. Now I'm going to scroll through 1 Corinthians 13. You can check out the collation yourself there in the link under this video. I have the same data process here for 1 Corinthians 13. I'm not going to go through that. You can check that out. I want to go to the conclusion, okay? So the collations found in this document demonstrate the following summative takeaways. Number 1, The 1602 bishop served as the base text for the King James translators. Folks, this isn't this to me now. We need to put to bed and put to rest once and for all time any chatter in pro-King James spaces that they did not follow Rule 1. It's absolutely not true. The folks that said that did not know what they were talking about. They did not have access to the documents, and so they just said things that weren't correct, okay? Rule 1 was absolutely followed, and it was followed with a high degree of fidelity. In fact, Manuscript 98 makes no sense. It makes no sense. The document here, it makes absolutely no sense unless a 1602 bishop is serving as its base text, okay? Many bishops' readings were moved forward into the AV without alteration. And then, as I've already said, Rule 1 was followed with a high degree of fidelity. So at least two, if not three, stages of revision are visible here, okay? Or more. We can literally see stage one revisions and then later revisions after that as the King James translators take this thing back to the anvil time after time after time as they work through this process. Manuscript 98 highlights and accents at least two, in my mind, probably three, if not more, stages of revision that are occurring. And you can see them happening when you look through the collation. Rule 14 was followed in conjunction with Rule 1. Many readings from pre-1611 English Bibles were used in the emendations to the Bishop's Bible by the King James translators. When the translators judged that the, quote, truth of the original Rule 1 was not adequately expressed by the bishops or any other pre-1611 English Bible, they crafted their own original English readings, okay? And then we've already seen that there are at least five different categories of emendations are visible in the collation tables above. Category one, bishop's reading is accepted into the AV without any changes. Category two, bishop's reading is accepted into manuscript 98 without any changes, but then amended in the AV. Category three, the bishop's reading is amended into manuscript 98 and then accepted into the AV without any further changes. Category four, the bishop's reading is amended in manuscript 98 and then further amended in the AV. Category five, the bishop's reading is amended in manuscript 98 only to have some or all of the original bishop's reading reinstated in the AV. And then this obviously means that the King James translators took their work back to the anvil many times as they stated they did in the preface to the reader. And then what this tells us then is that manuscript 98 sits about halfway in the process used by the King James translators to revise the Bishop's Bible into what would become the King James Bible, and I should add, for the New Testament epistles. Manuscript 98 only has in it the work of the Second Westminster Company that was assigned the work of revising the New Testament epistles. So it's pretty amazing, folks, what we can do. And you can go to Lesson 166, which I'll also include a link to in the description of this video. And you need to check out the statistics on this on pages 9 and 10 of Lesson 166. So I will leave that for you to do if you are interested in that. But this is really cool here, what we're able to do. And this is only right now still for Manuscript 98. We haven't even gotten into yet a deep dive into the Bodleian Bod 1602 Bishop's Bible, which literally is a 1602 Bishop's Bible with the handwritten notations of the translators in the margin written on the pages of a 1602 Bishop's Bible. It's pretty incredible, folks, the level of depth that we're able to see when we look at these primary source documents. So for a guy like me who's into history, I get kind of like really excited about all this. And it literally allows us to look behind the veil and see the process of the translators in a way that we really have not been able to, because a lot of these documents have either gone unstudied by King James advocates or they're not even known in some cases. And so it's been a real rewarding process for me to do this and to see what's going on myself. So I would encourage you, check out Lesson 166. I'll leave a link to that in the video. Check out Lesson 167 and 168, where I give a very thorough presentation of the document right here that I've been working off of in this video. Go back and look at the one from December, Looking Behind the Veil. I'm going to make this part two, and then I'll probably make a little playlist of these two videos. Then when we get into looking at BOD 1602, then I can kind of add some shorter videos to that sequence. So if you have enjoyed this video, please like this video, leave a comment, share it, subscribe to our channel, help get the word out about the content that we're trying to create here and provide for you here through Grace Life Bible Church. Want to remind you about a couple things before you go. If you haven't already done so, please consider checking out my book, Rightly Dividing E.W. Bullinger, Assessing His Life, Ministry, and Impact. You can help support the ministry if you are interested in picking that up. Also want to remind you here about the Grace History Project. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we are rebroadcasting the Grace History Project. And we are currently up to, at the end of this week, we will have released, I believe, 50 lessons in this sequence. And don't forget about the playlist to all of these that we are creating every week or adding to every week. You can get that also in the description for this video. But we're right at a point now in this series where we're looking at the resurgence of Pauline Truth, really getting deep into John Nelson Darby, where and how he came to understand things about dispensational truth. So this is really excited to be re-releasing this. Don't forget to check out the From This Generation Forever class website as we continue to add also to this every week as far as the lessons go. And also, don't forget the podcast. My wife and I do the Just Grace It podcast with Brian and Becky Ross. Earlier this week, we just released a new episode, Yielding to Our New Identity in Christ. If you haven't listened to that, you can check that out. Just a couple quick reminders here. Bible Reading Challenge, 2022 Bible Reading Challenge. Here's a couple different reading plans you can choose from. Two videos describing what the challenge is all about. And then some links to King James Reader's Bibles if you're interested in picking that up. And then a reminder about live streaming. We live stream on Sunday morning from the assembly building at 9 o'clock, the adult Sunday school class, where we're currently doing From This Generation Forever. And then at around 10:40 from our main service in our main auditorium. Please check that out. We are on YouTube. We are on Facebook. And now you can check us out right here on the church's homepage by clicking on the live stream link at gracelifebiblechurch.com. Trying to provide a lot of different avenues for edification for the body of Christ. We appreciate anyone who supports the ministry. We covet your prayers. Obviously, we appreciate any financial support that you could give and partnering with us here as we try to do the work of the ministry. We appreciate that. Before you go, most importantly, if you have never trusted Jesus Christ's death, burial, and resurrection, and his shed blood on the cross as the only total complete payment for your sin, do it today. Don't let another day go by where you don't rest your faith in the faith of Christ and what he accomplished and what he did for you at Calvary through his death, burial, and resurrection. You need to trust Jesus Christ today. You need to accept the provision that was only provided through his shed blood for your sin and his resurrection from the dead. When you rest your faith in the faith of Christ and what he did for you, the very moment you do that, you pass from death to life. You receive eternal life as a free gift. He'll take you out from under the kingdom of darkness and translate you into the kingdom of his dear son. Trust the gospel today before it's everlasting too late. Thanks for your time. Appreciate your support and prayers. See you next time.